Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning. How are you, Dr. Paul?
I am doing well, and we're going to visit today with our viewers on the subject of Ukraine. We've talked about it a lot before, but the problems haven't disappeared there, and it's back in the news today. There's military exercises.
Yeah.
There's an imminent threat that the Russians are going to invade Ukraine, what they're working on. So therefore, they have to have military operations to show how tough we are. And the Ukrainians are feeling their oats. But of course, the American dollars, American equipment, and NATO stand behind them. But the whole thing is so much of this is artificially built up. But the excuse now is that the Russians are putting more military in the Sea of Azov, which is right next to, the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And they have to have really an excuse to build more weaponry and to aggravate. But it is true, that we've been involved. We're involved in this. And the threats from our administration, once again, against Russia. And of course, we've gone over so often this whole thing about the transfer of the Crimea and the controversy there. But once that happened, 100% of the problem was, of course, Russia, and therefore they qualified for sanction. So that is ongoing and really ushered in this, last several years of a sharp anti-Russian sentiment in this country. So that once again, there's more reason to, throw out challenges to Russia and pointing out that they're ready to invade Ukraine. I happen to think, Daniel, that the odds of the Russian forces landing tanks and invading Ukraine are about 1 in 10,000. I mean, it isn't that they're not going to deal with their problems and protect their interests, which they're doing that, and that's what we'll talk about. But they're not about to take over Ukraine. It was a completely different situation when it came to the Crimea.
Yeah, it is different. This is an example of how President Trump has inherited Obama's boneheaded policy on Ukraine. He inherited this stupid coup, which is the source of all of these problems right now. And unfortunately, it just goes to show that to a degree, personnel is policy. Because President Trump, despite his rhetoric, despite his campaign talk, he's not been able to put people into place that will affect a change in Obama's disastrous policy. And so that's why you have something like Operation Clear Sky 2018, this massive military exercise on Ukrainian soil, NATO and Ukrainian troops training together, U.S. Air Force training Ukrainian pilots, 700 troops from NATO countries. U.S. Air Force spokesman said the goal is to enhance regional capabilities to secure air sovereignty and promote peace and security through cooperation.
Could you call that a show of force? Show of military force is what they do. But there's never a calculation on the real cost of that, when you think about the millions, billions of dollars spent on these operations. And we do this constantly. And it's not like the world is in quite that serious a situation, imminent threat, and therefore we have to do it. And they have these buildups. But this involves NATO, I believe, that in trying to protect this area and to challenge Russia. But that's generally been the case. We keep moving against all the inclinations or the promises made by the West was that we wouldn't be doing this. But this is another example that we're going to sit right on the borders because this Sea of Azov is now in this argument here. You know, who owns it? Who's going to use it? How is the protection of ships leaving there? And so it's an interesting question about how something like this should be handled.
We do this a lot, but I think it does help to imagine it in a different context. So think about it. Our viewers can think about, so what if Russia had been manipulating elections in Mexico and got an anti-U.S. government in Mexico and then started launching military exercises on the border of Texas, with the Mexican military? There would definitely be concern, and rightly so, on the part of the Americans. Yet when the Russians react the same way, all of a sudden it's Russian aggression, you know, but it was launched. But the Sea of Azov is interesting, too, because the Ukrainians, of course, they love the largesse that's coming to them from their Western sponsors. All of a sudden they're getting notice and getting attention. But they've announced that they're going to build a naval base on the Sea of Azov. And as, in fact, I think we have a map to kind of bring it a little bit better into focus of what we're talking about here. You can see the Sea of Azov clearly. It empties into the Black Sea. Well, with the Russian takeover of Crimea, you can see that now Russia controls both sides and the strait between the Sea of Azov and the Black Sea. Ukrainians are claiming that the Russians are harassing their shipping going in and out of there. So they say they want to build a big naval base there. The Russians already do naval exercises, obviously, in the Sea of Azov. So you're seeing a potential conflict point there that really is being goaded on. I'm sure the U.S. Navy would love to see a Ukrainian base there that they can go and visit.
Yeah, but it's all Russia's fault. And, of course, it's interesting, at that area in the Straits, the Russians have built a bridge over there since, the reunification of the Crimea with Russia, which, and you point out, this is a narrow strait, and if they're talking about ships going in and out of there, it's probably a pretty vital, piece of property. But, you know, the big question is, if we had less of, if we were a non-interventionist country and not involved in this at all and never stirred up any of this problem and that NATO didn't exist, how would countries deal with this? The two countries would have to sit down and figure it out. But, you know, it doesn't, from my viewpoint, it doesn't seem like it would be that difficult to, both countries would have an interest in, the straits and building bridges and all this. But as soon as you get a lot of people involved, NATO's involved, the United States involved, oil gets involved, selling weapons get involved, so often, it's the sale of weapons that they want. That's why they have to keep this churning. We, know a little bit about there's another military operation coming up in Norway, and for the same reason. And the article I read said they were going to buy 52 F-35s.
Good luck with that.
Wow. But you can see, even though the plane isn't a very good military plane, but it's very, very valuable for people who make war profits.
Yeah, you know, that's for sure. And you mentioned the key word, which is weapons. And you look at, I talked earlier about the boneheaded policy. Well, Trump just, is running with it. They announced earlier this year, and they provided, for the first time ever, they provided lethal military aid to Ukraine. The U.S. has done. They sent over 210 anti-tank missiles earlier this year. And then the DOD, the Defense Department, announced on July 20th, and this is interesting, they announced that they're going to provide an additional $200 million for Ukraine to use for additional training, equipment, and advisory efforts. And that brings the total U.S. military assistance, U.S. assistance to Ukraine for military, $1 billion since 2014. But we know what's interesting about this, Dr. Paul, is the DOD, the military, the Pentagon, announced this just days after President Trump had that successful meeting with Putin. So when you talk about the deep state, it makes you wonder, here's, Trump comes back, from a visit with Putin, hey, we had a good time, looks like we're going to start getting along. All of a sudden, his Pentagon says, whoa, we're going to send $200 million more over there to Ukraine.
Yeah, that's for sure. But, the argument's been going on for a long time, and this division of Ukraine is, I think, very important. And, when there was a split, when there was this Yanukovych was pushed out and Poroshenko was took over. Once again, I was thinking about, how should things like this be taken care of? Why couldn't we think of Ukraine as not owned by Russia or owned by the United States or by NATO or the war profiteers or the people who want the oil? But that's too much to ask. But, probably if they would think about the principle of self-determination and actually, some form of secession or division, this seems to me like the ideal place where maybe one third of Ukraine could maybe build an alliance with the rest of Ukraine. But you know, the western part of Ukraine is not exactly civil libertarian. So that they may be much better off being by themselves. But it would have to be. It's not going to happen at the UN, and that would only happen if the dream came true, or the promises, the false promises of World War I. Oh, yeah, this is a mess. We've really messed this thing up. But the solution is, we should always have self-determination. Let the people vote. Let them decide, you know, how their country's to be run. But unfortunately, I think we're going to see more and more of this, and it's always militarization solve these conflicts. And this seems to be getting built up. We're talking about Ukraine right now. But, you know, in a couple of weeks, there's going to be another one that's probably bigger. You know, we're dealing with Norway, and they're talking about you know putting many more troops over there. We have Marines up there, and lo and behold, you know, in the Arctic, where it's very cold, there's oil up there too. So.
What do you know? But you know that is the Western Ukraine. They do have a problem with extremists. I mean, with literally out and out Nazis, and the Western sponsors don't like to talk about this. They say it's a conspiracy theory, but the pictures are there, and it's pretty obvious these are some pretty bad characters out there. But you know, the thing is, the Eastern Ukraine, a big chunk of it, if you look at the voting, if you look at the languages spoken, it's 80-90% Russian speaking, Russian, you know, pro-Russian candidate voting. So you have that, the history is there, and it's complex. It's too complex for Americans, even the ones in think tanks who think they're so smart. But, you know, they were working it out before we got in there and decided to start turning the knobs, and they were doing it through trade. You know, it was just natural to trade between them and between Russia and the East and West. It was just a natural thing, if we just go back to that.
I think we have a bad habit. You know, there were a few dissenters in Syria, and it was way blown out of proportion on why they needed a revolution. Then all of a sudden, there were the threat of the Al-Qaeda, and we had to go in to get the Al-Qaeda, you know, and stop them. And lo and behold, we went in there, and we actually helped Al-Qaeda, you know. But the ongoing things of this division and fighting and involvement, because once one country goes in, there has to be two or three more of the others. You know, throughout my lifetime, most of the time, I thought of Syria as a country, you know, and it was a sort of independent country and continued to exist. I understand it's an old country, too.
Yeah.
But there's nothing very unified about that country now. And it's on that principle that you mentioned. Why do we go in there and stir up these troubles? And most of the time there's an explanation and the people suffer from it. You know, the people don't vote for these wars unless they're really, really energized by the propaganda. But most of the time they say there has to be a better way. But certainly what's happening there doesn't look like there'll be peace and prosperity with a non-interventionist government very soon.
And the people will do the suffering. You know, just in late August, the prime minister of the self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic, that's the breakaway part, he was assassinated in a restaurant. And so there, people are saying that is really the beginning now of ramping this whole thing up again. So there really is a threat that the violence is going to break out again. Ukraine has a great moral hazard. They've been emboldened by the U.S. Oh, they're coming here, the idea that they're going to protect them. The U.S. is giving a blank check that there's no way they can cash it. But the other thing is, you know, there's a tendency to blame Putin for all of this. You know, Putin is going to do this. But people don't realize in Russia, the main opposition party is not the pro-West, you know, all of these fancy people. It's the Russian Communist Party. It's still the number one opposition party. And just last month, Zhuganov, the head of the Russian Communist Party, flat out said, we should take eastern Ukraine. So the idea that Putin's opposition are these Western liberals is mistaken. The only thing that I would add, I guess, to close is just another thing in the equation is that Hungary is blocking Ukraine's further cooperation with NATO over an issue of an ethnic Hungarian minority in Ukraine being now forbidden by a new education law from speaking their native language in schools. So that is causing a real dispute. NATO is angry that Hungary's holding this whole thing up because they want to get Ukraine in as quick as possible. So that really is something to watch. Hungary's on the bad list for Brussels for a number of things. But My final word is we don't do this often enough, but I do want to thank our viewers, especially our live viewers who come and join us every day. It's a great little club, and we're really happy and grateful that you join us. Dr. Paul?
Very good. And I want to follow up on your comments about NATO, because you can see where the agitation is to promote a certain position through NATO. But, you know, Robert Taft, at the end of World War II, was very much opposed to NATO, believing that it would drag us into these conflicts unnecessarily, so he didn't believe we should be involved. And in some ways, you know, we hear, well, NATO's taken advantage of us, and we have to pay all their bills. And yet, the way I see it is if we have a fight going on or something we're involved in so many countries, and we need moral, so-called political moral support, we go to NATO. And, oh, yeah, NATO, they back us up in Afghanistan and different places like this. So I see no benefit whatsoever to a international government body like NATO that orchestrates all this. It should be done as close to home as possible, and I think that we'd all be much better off. So it's been said, by the president on occasion, that maybe we shouldn't even be in NATO. Well, I think that's a good idea. We ought not to be in NATO, and it would be a lot better for us. And when our bankruptcy is declared and we wonder what happened, that we spent so much money and the dollars crash, and we say, well, why did we live so extravagantly that we could run the world and police the world and spend endlessly? Well, maybe we'll sit down and think about it and change our tune. But in the meantime, we'll keep doing our best to report on these issues and try to make the point of why non-interventionist in foreign policy is the right way to go if you're looking for peace and prosperity. It's not that difficult to understand. It's part of the American tradition, but because it's actually the only thing that offers true peace, people should really consider it. And we're going to have that opportunity because the current system is not going to last forever. There will be a reorientation of the nations just as they have periodically. The Soviet system came down, and one thing that brought them down was Afghanistan. And it looks like Afghanistan may participate once again in the downfall of an empire. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.